Chapter 12. Tethys's senses focus in a wash of stimuli. Grunts and banging hammers fill his ears. The stink of forge fires, dirt, blood, and unwashed bodies. He looks down to see a battered iron helm in his hands, the metal warped after repeatedly being hammered crudely back into some semblance of shape. No. It is not in Tethys's hands. It is in Angron's.
Oi!
A voice calls out. Angron looks up into the scarred chest of a gladiator slave. The man reaches out with one mailed fist and takes the helmet.
Oh, Cuneglass wore that pot last.
The gladiator scrapes his fingers along the inside of the helm, flashing an ugly, gap-toothed grin as he peels a handful of hair and scalp from it.
He die. Not well. Not quick. Pray his shade gone. You avoid the same.
Angron catches the helmet as the gladiator lumbers away, chuckling as he eats the scraps the dead man left behind. Armored walking machines clank around the slave fighters, lightning dancing from the tips of their electroprods. They have been released from the caves up a tunnel into a dark anteroom, with another tunnel leading out the other side. It is empty but for a wide wooden table and a few racks laden with decrepit weapons and armor. The smartest and most experienced gladiators rush to claim the most prized war gear, snatching up axes and tridents, hissing at one another as they lay mail and scale armor over their bodies. Angron has not left the caves since the Devil's Tears. He knows nothing of these warriors in chains, or their ways. By the time he reaches the table, everything of use has been taken, leaving Angron with only the helmet. He looks inside, still smelling the blood of its past wearer, and pulls it over his head. The machines begin to speak, squawking in the master's tongue that Angron is slowly beginning to understand. Many of the words are a mystery, but he hears hot dust before they form a wall behind the gladiators and march them forward into the tunnel ahead at the point of their crackling prods. There is a door, thrice the height of the biggest of the gladiators, at the end of the tunnel. With short stabs of their weapons, the machines force them towards it, with Angron in the centre of the mob. The further down the passage they go, vibrations begin to course from the ground and walls. Muffled sounds reach their ears. They almost sound like drums. Drums and screaming voices. Dust and sand spills from cracks in the ceiling above. The gladiators begin to roar, beating fists against their chests and ramming their heads together in clangs of battered steel. Angron squints through the warped T-visor of his helm as the great doors open in a spill of light and sound.
"Die well,"
says the gap-toothed gladiator, looking back at Angron with his ugly smile. They are driven forward into the light, and Angron is out in the arena again, the same one where he had endured the Devil's Tears. The pyramid has vanished, and any trace of the burning water is gone. All that stretches before him is a bowl of sun-baked earth, cracked and coated in wisps of gritty dust. They are surrounded by thousands upon thousands of people, more than there were to watch the slaves die climbing the pyramid, packed into towering banks of tiered seating until they are full to bursting. The voices are so loud they kick up curtains of the searing dust across the arena floor. Angron can feel the unrestrained fervour of the crowd, a monumental lust for blood. The man next to Angron dies before his eyes have adjusted to the light. Hot blood splashes his face, nearly blinding him as he leaps back from the falling corpse. The strongest of the gladiators have formed into a pack, isolating and butchering the weak and poorly armed slaves that stand upon the hot dust with them. The fighter closest to Angron swings his axe at him with a roar, but the strike is slow, incredibly slow, and Angron is able to sidestep it as well as the three overhand slashes that follow it. He can see the fatigue already leaching into the man's arms, the sweat prickling out across his flesh, turning the dust, coating it, into a chalky film. He weaves aside once more, waiting for the gladiator to overextend himself, and allows instinct to take control. Angron punches, a short thrust at the man's heart. Bones flex against his knuckles before collapsing with a cluster of muffled snaps. The air is driven out of the man's lungs, the last breath he will ever take. Angron's blow makes a pit out of the gladiator's chest, and as he withdraws his fist, the fighter drops in a tumble of twitching limbs. Angron pries the axe loose from his clutching fingers, turning in time to block a descending strike from a spiked maul. He cannot hear the crowd clearly as he fights. They are a distant roar, like an ocean crashing against the shoreline, and he feels them like heat against his back. The heat flares every time his axe takes a life. Tethys feels the blood coat his chest and arms, the syrupy trickle as it drips from his chin. He experiences the child's sensations as if they are his own, from the jarring impact as the head of the axe cleaves into a skull to the deep black sting that wells up in his chest with the pain of every butchered foe. The last of the other gladiators is thrown to the ground. Weaponless, he snarls a curse, trying to crawl away through the hot dust. Angron stands over him, feeling the desperation and fear rippling off the scarred veteran of countless death matches. He's the gap-toothed warrior from the arming chamber. This makes Angron hesitate for a moment, and he doesn't see the knife until it is buried to the hilt in his gut. The blade is cold inside Angron. The pain follows before his heart gives another beat, and the anger follows that. A kick sends the gladiator sprawling, and Angron pulls the blade free and throws it aside into the dust. The crowd's shapeless howl becomes uniform, calling him by name.
Angron! Angron! Angron!
The weapon is light in Angron's hands, like it was always meant to be there. The hesitation is gone. His blood is thunder in his ears, and he swings the axe. The vision wavers. Blackness boils up from the ground, swallowing Tethys in a surge of disorientation. He feels himself disintegrating as he is cast about, his fragile notion of self unravelling into nothing bit by bit, before things snap back into focus. The arena is gone. Tethys feels cool air on skin that is not his own, and hears the soft patter of moisture dripping from above him. There is an almost complete absence of light, yet through his father's eyes he can see his surroundings clearly. Men and women are huddled together across the floor of a cave, wearing the tattered clothes and manacles of slaves. He hears low voices and people crying out in their sleep. An older man is sitting beside Angron, his face an overlapping network of old scars crested by patches of a steel-coloured beard. He offers Angron a rag, and the youth accepts it to wipe the dust and congealed blood from his face. Tethys does not know how much time has passed since Angron's axe fell. His sense of time within the memories is curdled, disjointed. His father is bigger now, stronger, and the words that had confounded him in the arena now flow with ease from his lips.
"Who are these people, Onomaeus?"
Angron hisses. He glares up at the ceiling of the cave, as though he can stare through it all the way to the arena above.
"What kind of monsters are they, who come here to revel in our agony?"
"Monsters?"
The old fighter whom Angron calls Onomaeus gives a soft smile that does not match his twisted mask of old wounds.
"You're the mountain child, yeah? Never seen anything other than that peak, and these caves, and the hot dust. You've never seen where these monsters go to lay their heads, the lives they find themselves having to live."
Onomaeus shifts, groaning as his protesting joints pop before settling back down beside Angron.
I have. I was born into it. The slums. The desperation they breed. Waking each day to fight with too many others over less than there was the day before. Feeling trapped.
He shakes his fist, sending a rattle through his chains.
Just as surely as we are here. Sometimes...
He lays a hand on Angron's shoulder.
Sometimes what you need more than anything in the world is to know that there is someone lower than you. That no matter how dark it may seem, you're not at the absolute bottom. It isn't much, but people take power where they can in this world to survive. Watching us die while they still get to live, it's all the power they'll ever have.
Anomaeus frowns and withdraws his hand. He looks down, slowly flexing his fingers. His eyes flick back to Angron.
So no, Angron,
Anomaeus says after a moment, lowering his hand into his lap.
Those people aren't monsters. Spare them your anger, because there are more than enough real monsters that deserve it.